Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan, and thank you for joining me for the 158th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. My guest today is Fawzia Moussa. She is born into a privileged family, and when she was 5 years old, the war broke out in Somalia, and she and her family then lived in poverty as nomads in a refugee camp in Ethiopia for years before she came to the United States in 1995. She lived in San Diego and Atlanta before making her way to Maine in 2003. Today, she and her family live in Lewiston, Auburn area, where she works at Healthy Androscoggin as a community health outreach worker, educating people about lead. She's also an oncology patient counselor navigator and organizes Maine community integrations while somehow juggling life with five children aged 17 to 3. So it's not hard to imagine why she was selected this March to be one of five amazing leaders to be recognized through the organization called Empower the Immigrant Woman. And honestly, I can't believe you even have time to come and do something like this, Fawzia. I really appreciate you coming on New Mainers Speak today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So let's start back in your childhood. Can you help us picture your life as a girl both in Somalia and Ethiopia? I think that this is a really important part of your story.
My name is Fawzia. I was born northern Somalia, the second largest city called Hargeisa. Prior to my family living in Somalia, both my father and mother were born and raised in Ethiopia. Their ethnicity is Somali, but their nationality is Ethiopian. In 1977, the Somalia government attacked the Ethiopian government for land dispute. So the Somali, ethnic Somalis became refugees from Ethiopia and ran and flee to Ethiopia. So my father and mother were already refugees fleeing from Ethiopia and then went to northern Somalia, a city called Hargeisa, which is not far from where my family currently lives today. So then in 1982, December, end of December 24, they had me. I'm firstborn for my mother, but not my father's firstborn. So shortly after, in 1988, when Somalia and Ethiopia signed a peace treaty and ceased war, we became refugees from Somalia. My mother tribe of who claimed to be the indigenous and the people who owned the land of northern Somalia were fighting for their right against the Somali government in 1988. So they were, I think that war was called the Revolution War, because it was a particular tribe against the ruling of the government. So one very fateful night, it was raining, I remember very vividly, even though I was young. It was raining, it was thunderous, it was hailing, dark evening. My mother asked my father if the rain, there's more to the thunder. I guess because of her previous war experience, she knew there was more to the thunder that night. That wasn't just nature alone, but it was something else, I guess, under that. So my dad, who's a tall, structured man, he was pacing back and forth. And I remember telling my mom, no, woman, there's nothing to it. It's just the usual thunders and rain, so go to bed. So we went to bed. It was me and my little sister. My mom had an infant daughter, a younger daughter, I don't know how old then she was, and then she was also with a child, early pregnancy. So about close to morning, very close to morning that day, this particular side of northern Somalia, when it rains in the morning, there's a morning dew, and it's very foggy early in the morning. So my dad rushed into my sister and I room, and he woke us up. And I remember it was just so much sound. I didn't know what it was. I can tell there was something off, but I didn't know exactly what was going on. So he took us to our mother, their master bedroom. And walking into the master bedroom, I remember seeing my mother face down on the ground with the infant on her chest. And she was not saying much other than reading the verses of the Quran, and she was reciting prayers. And so we have in their master bedroom, there was a built-in closet with the long mirrors on the top. So it almost looked like a Victorian furniture. So my dad fit my sister and I into each of the built-in closets. And he left the door, and I still, nobody explained to us what was going on. I was always a little nosy child. So when he came back, what seems like a few minutes later, my mother asked him, she said, "When is this going to end?" And my dad said, "Well, about noon today, they should level the city to the ground." Still didn't understand. I couldn't comprehend it, what was going on still, because I was too young. I don't know how long after I got out of the closet and I went outside. And I saw my dad and a few other men in that county who gathered in front of our house, which was up on a hill. And they were looking the direction where my mom and dad now live, Ethiopia. Up on the hill, there was a governor's house. So it was, you can see it was overlooking the whole county. And from there, I can see bullets. I didn't know then it was called bullets, but I can see the sky was covered something, look a lot like stars. It was popping like a popcorn style. And it was different colors, light peach color and white colors. And every other then, you have the missile in the middle. I can hear the echoing of the missile, but I couldn't see the flaring or anything about, just the echoing. I don't know how long after that same night, the next door neighbor, who was, I guess, part of the army, the government army, had a lot to lose, I guess. So he put his wife and his younger child and himself and the driver in front in the pickup truck. He put his maid, the rest of his children, and some of his relatives at the back of the pickup truck. He pulled in front of our house, and we were adjacent to each other. And he said, "I'm leaving. I don't know about you, but you people can stay, but I'm leaving. I'm escaping with my family." And so my mother gave me a thermos and a cup, a thermos that had a tea, hot tea in it, and a cup. She also put all her gold and all her valuable items in a pillowcase, and she tied on my bag. I was carrying that. She picked up my sister, put her in the truck. My dad was closing the door, and when my mom was halfway of the truck, and my mom was a heavy-set woman, so she was dangling still halfway. People were trying to pull into the truck. I don't know, for some reason, somebody started shooting directly at the truck, the pickup truck driver, the driver himself. So he took off. He hit the gas and took off. I ran. It was uphill where he was driving. So I was running after him for a long time. And for some reason, I couldn't catch. My mom was, you know, stop yelling. And I'm mommy after her. And he would not stop. So for some reason, on my right side of my rib, I felt as if I broke something, so I was unable to breathe with a lot of pain. So I stopped. I bent over, trying to catch my breath. And when I bent over, I had a time when I was able to see just legs. Thousands of people right behind me. Still, it's very foggy. I don't see all of their faces or what they're wearing, but I hear just a lot of echoing, like a lot of Somali crying, like prayers and where are my kids or stuff for me or help me. And so people who were running, somebody held my shoulder and dragged me to run with them. So I went with them. We ended up almost close to sun, when the sun was about to come out. We ended up in the trenches. And I think, I didn't know then, but what I learned later on is that we were at a government army base where they have something called radar, something that detects Ethiopian airplanes if they come to Somali air, so they don't, they wear the warplanes.
Anti-aircraft.
Yeah, so I was under a tank, this camouflage tank, near the, and I didn't see the tank. All I look up and I see this long, long antenna, and I didn't see that I was under that long tube where the tank fires from, and the tank fires, and all I see was blood on my chest, my little dress, and I couldn't talk. I guess I don't know what happened to my ears. I don't know if I burst my eardrums. I don't know, something happened to me, but I was unable to talk. And I look up, and I saw this tiny man with a helmet that matched camouflages with the tank itself, and he was circling around with his little top head that looked like a donut shape. And this another man pulled me out of there, and we ended up in a trench. We stayed there, I don't know, maybe half day or how long. I don't know how long it was. But all I remember was these little airplanes that were camouflaged, two warplanes will get up, go down, shoot somebody, and come back up. And when we got out, of the trench, I was tired. I wanted to sleep for some reason, just to left alone and sleep. This elderly Somali lady offered me a milk that was half water, half sour, something. It was just, the milk became cottage cheese and sour water. That's how I could explain to my English. And she said, drink it. And so I drank that. It was taste nasty, but I didn't have any other choice or anything to eat. Yeah. As we were walking back to town, I find my dad, who also was covered with blood. I guess there was a bullet that grazed his chest. It didn't did much, but he had a superficial wound. But he has a lot of blood and dust on his clothes. As we were coming back and walking back to town, every other time, and the house were abandoned, the doors were left behind. If you were a cripple, or you were elderly, or you were too sick to walk, you were left to face your destiny. So as we were walking back to our houses, every other time people would run to different empty abandoned house, because I guess this time the guerrilla fighters were defeated by the government. So the wounded men from the guerrilla fight went to the houses that people abandoned them. So they were shooting us from the windows as we were coming back. And it was this time it was broad daylight. So my dad, who of course who knew war because he was refugee from Ethiopia initially, they will duck, the man will duck, people will duck from this. And I didn't know what they were ducking from. All I can hear was like, brr, 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 those bullets. And I was just curious what everybody was ducking from. But we ended up about late evening coming back to our own house. My dad and I stayed about a year or so in the war. We were told that my mom and my little sister pickup truck was blown by bazooka, so they were dead. I guess my mother and my sisters were told the same thing, that my dad and I died in the war. So about with that year when we were staying in the war, the active war, every other day it was just this show. The government was getting defeated, or the opposition was getting defeated. Whoever gets defeated, we run to the winner's side and flee with them. Eventually, my father and the elderly man in that county took guns themselves. They collect some left behind guns to protect the citizens, because it became a tribal war. The oppositioners who were fighting for the government, the people who were supporting for the government, was trying to rape them, elude their houses, kill them, you know, rape women. So then the men, elderly men and decent men, took upon themselves to protect those tribes that were vulnerable to getting attacks. I remember people from Ethiopia, which is 2 hours. My mom lives in a city called Jigjiga today, since we flee from Somalia in 19. I got there about early 89. It's 2 hours away if you drive from there. It's a border of Ethiopia and Somalia, northern Ethiopia, Somalia. People from Ethiopia will drive to elude Somalia. They eluded so much of the city. They even took the, you know, these expensive doors and villa doors and marbles and kitchens. When they couldn't loot anymore, they took the furniture, they took everything. And if it was not eluding, it was the bombing. It was just watching. Like the town, the county my dad and I was residing, it was a county that was named after this particular town of Ethiopia, because much of the people who reside there were originally Somali ethnics who flee from Ethiopia. So it was a wealthy town.
Well, Fauzia, this is a huge story. The impressions you had as a mere 5-year-old are so powerful. I can't believe you can describe it with as much ease as you can, because that sounds like a really hard time.
Oh, when I call my mother once in a while, I'll call and ask. I'll say, do you remember that tree or that child or such? And she always, I don't know, gets surprised by that.
That you remember so
much? Yeah, because she's like, I don't know how, you know, I don't know.
You were on high alert. So it sounds like your mom and sibling were not dead.
No.
And you found them how later. Much longer?
Yeah, about what seemed like a lifetime, but I think it was a year. Mm-hmm. My father, who was a pharmacist and also a businessman. He had a man who used to work at his pharmacy. He was a pharmacist. I remember he used to wear this white pharmacy shirt, you know, and has his name tag on it. He asked him, he said, you know, my father's father and much of my father's family never flee from Ethiopia. They stayed this desert in Ethiopia called Ogaden, because that's where they're indigenous to. And they're nomads. So he's, and Somalis, you know, if you want to know somebody who they are, you count your grandfathers and your lineages. Yeah. So he said, you know, he gave him a sheet. He said, my father's name is this. He's from a particular tribe. They're indigenous to this land. And you go your way and find her, but take my daughter with you. So he gave some money to a guy, and the guy, we drove from Somalia with this huge, you know, those state-to-state trucks. But only, you know, the container tab was open. Oh. So people were put in there stacking up food with no barriers in between, no ladders, nothing.
No safety. Just being in that truck.
Yeah. And we drove. And in the whole time we were driving, we were scared. The war airplanes shooting you down, or landmine going off, because they were doing that.
Yeah.
So we got to Ethiopia. And we went to bigger towns in Ethiopia, and finally I found my mother in a small town in Ogaden called, I think it was Qorilo or something.
I feel like crying just to think of what you must have felt like just to see your mother again when you thought she was dead.
It was really scary.
That's pretty intense.
It took years of therapy not to cry today.
Oh. You're a brave woman.
Thank you.
If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Fawzia Musse. Fawzia went from being a girl in an influential family to being a girl in a refugee family. Her life has led her to understand the role wealth and poverty play in our personal and political problems, and that's why she believes that our strength depends on everyone in the community doing well together. Can you tell us about your organization called Maine Community Integrations and what you're doing to turn hate and fear into a mutual understanding in the Lewiston area?
Well, after now almost 20 years, so, you know, close to 16 years of Somali refugees arriving in Maine, I feel like we make a lot of progress, whether from, you know, kids graduating from high school, from colleges, from people in the workforce. So MCI, Maine Community Integrations, was born to reflect on that growth. We feel like we're in a time now where we can integrate, not assimilate, because we discourage people from assimilation, but to integrate and, you know, take what's good in America and what's good of their culture, utilize the two, and then become a better form of themselves.
I like that. So rather than blending in and leaving your own culture behind, you bring both cultures together and make a hybrid.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
So tell us about the dialogues you've been doing. You've been a busy woman because you work all day and then you go to a second job, and then in the evenings you work on this Maine Community Integrations. But you told me about your dialogues, and I thought they're pretty interesting.
So post-election this year, a man named Steve Wessler, who's actually well-known in the state of Maine, we met him at the Maine People Alliance office, and he said he had a project and he was trying to create this dialogue, because Steve and I are not new to each other. The first influx of Somalis, when we had trouble with the schools and people were not getting along, he also showed up then and was able to help ease the tension between the two communities. So this time around, it was much needed too. He came, and so Maine People Alliance, Maine Church of Counselors, and Maine Community Integrations applied this grant called Open Society Fund. Also, MCI applied Women's Fund, Maine Women's Fund. So the two grants make it possible for us to develop this grant, this dialogue, community dialogues. I think the Open Society project is called Community Against Hate, but our local program is called Strengthening Our Bonds. So this 20 dinner dialogue is 10 dinner and 10 follow-up, was designed and facilitated by Steve Wessler. We help him facilitate. We also get interpreters. So each dinner is designed to have intentional people that are from faith community, from the law enforcement, from the health community, and also equal number of New Mainer community. So it's to ease the biases, whether it's implicit or explicit bias, whether it's just misunderstanding of, you know, any sort. This gives platform for both to talk to each other very, very plainly and very, I guess, nobody's beating around the bushes. So if you have anything about me, and whether, you know, this old rumor of, you know, Nimin is receiving new cars, or we got extra money, or we're draining the system, or we're welfare butchers, you know, to make that a place where they can understand each other and have dialogue. And then the idea is, very often you go to a meeting where you're told that what you learn here stays here. Ours is the opposite. What you learn here, you have to spread that.
Please share.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, it's a lot harder to hate someone close up.
Yeah.
You see their smile and their warmth, and you realize they're not really getting free cars.
Yeah.
They're actually working three jobs.
I actually asked, I mean, sincerely, I said, is that actually a place to apply because I need a car?
That would be so convenient.
I'm still waiting for that.
So what are you hoping for your organization over the coming 5 years? How would you like to, how would you like things to turn out in Lewiston area? What would success look like for?
I think we're almost there. I mean, Lewiston, a small town with little resources. And with little resources and little manpower, they came a long way. I am really, really proud to say that Lewiston is a beautiful town with a lot of beautiful people. And I'm hoping that together, both the longtime Mainers and the newcomers, we can make it even more successful.
Yeah. I think it's really exciting to see Lewiston kind of come back to life. And it's thriving. It's got theater and culture and all kinds of businesses. Yeah. And the former state champion soccer team.
Yes.
Great. So you've always been a natural helper. You have served your community as a translator and a cultural broker and a general bridge builder. But now you're in a position of work where you're not only working with immigrants, but now you also work with American-born residents of Lewiston to raise awareness about lead. We only just have a couple minutes for this, but I wonder if you can tell us what it's like having a broader audience after all these years working with immigrants, and now you're working with everybody, and what the message is about lead that you want to get out there.
Well, I'm learning first working with New Mainers, there's a lot of intergenerational poverty, a lot of poorness in Lewiston. I thought it was just New Mainers because I worked for the New Mainers for the longest time. So working with American-born people who are different color from me, I learned a lot from them. I learned that a lot of people have, you know, low income issues. We have a lot of health disparity. We have a lot in common. And what I'm trying to, I guess, if anybody's listening today, I want them to learn from lead is that I saw in the summers, there's a lot of children at Kennedy Park and in the neighborhood who are running without shoes. And it's very important that children, you know, self-hygiene is very important. Lead is not curable. It's not treatable. But it's something if you upkeep your unit, if you eat healthy, if you exercise very often, and if you wash your children's hands a lot and you keep their shoes, it's something you can prevent. But it's something that we can collectively prevent together if we work together. It's not New Mainer versus the old-time Americans. It's not black versus white. It's an issue that affects all our children, and it does not discriminate.
And it affects our future when you've affected the brains of the children.
Yeah.
Lead, once it gets in your system, is awfully hard to get out.
Yes.
So better to keep your shoes at the door and keep from getting that lead in your system.
Yeah.
How do you think, in a couple words, that your life as a refugee influenced your work and your life today?
I was born in a middle-class family growing up, so I know it sounds really sad, but I feel like if I did not become a refugee, if I didn't go through this life, I would be a very different person. I don't think I'll have a lot of understanding for what I do today if I grew up the way I was without being a refugee. So I guess my struggle taught me a lot about life. It taught me to humble myself. I feel like because I'm a refugee, I'm able to navigate many, many different lenses. I can see what people take for granted. I often take it granted, so you know, bees is one of them, having a house over your roof, you know, working for something. And also, I don't know, I've in United States, there's this that if you work really hard, I mean, there's always hiccup in life and there's barriers, but at least if you try your best, you can get somewhere. Many of the countries where refugees and immigrants come from, asylum seekers, that opportunity doesn't exist. You can work all your life, but you don't know what you're working towards. The goal is not reachable. It's not attainable either. So knowing that, at least in this country, and also making difference. I mean, one of the things that I really like about the United States is First Amendment. You know, I can just go and rally about something on the middle of the street.
Here to the First Amendment.
I might not make much changes, but at least I can know that my voice counts.
You have
and
the
together,
right to
express
it. Yeah. Fauzia, you are magical. Not only do you manage to do the work of three or four women, you do it with joy and vivacity that makes everything seem possible. I wish you great success on all your projects that are designed to help others and make the community a richer place to live in, and for everyone by being accountable to one another. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you all for listening. Please join us each week for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. If you would like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmainerspeak.com or check out more related information at facebook.com/newmainerspeak. New Mainers Speak is also rebroadcast on Mondays at 4:30 p.m. on WERU-FM in Blue Hill and Bangor area. I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song Fauzia has selected for us. It's Neil Diamond's Coming to America, and that's what we're going to wrap things up with. Can you say one sentence about why you chose this song?
A long time ago, I watched a video on late night, and I saw boats and big ships coming from the Ellis Island, I think New York, and I saw immigrants of different walks of life coming to America. So it had an impact on me that you know, it's a land of immigrants. I mean, the duration at which we came is different, but ultimately we're all
In the grand scheme of things, all pretty recently.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes this country great.
Yes, all together. Freedom's light burning warm. Freedom's light burning.